Welcome to Melanina Speaking. It's your girl Renisha.
Hey guys, it's your girl Natalia.
What up, what up? It's Chelsea.
Hi guys, it's Jordan.
And welcome to episode 2. Woo!
Wow. We are
here.
Yes, and happy Martin Luther King Day.
Hey. Amen.
Mm-hmm. And we just want to shout out to all the love and support we got for our social media engagement in episode 1. Yes, it's pretty nerve-wracking to like put out your first podcast.
And without a doubt.
Just, you know, seeing what the world's going to say. And we got a lot of positive feedback. So thank you to everyone who has either called, messaged us, or DM'd us. We really, really appreciate you. Mm-hmm. We're super excited to get episode 2 started. It's pretty deep, I think. The topic today is colorism.
Ooh, what is that?
Mm. Yes. Yes.
We will let you know.
What is she?
She's a person of color. no, but we're super excited to get into how we feel about colorism. Where do we think colorism come from? And just like get into some others personal experience for colorism, because I know a lot of us has gone around and just asked our family or friends their experiences.
Yeah, mm-hmm. A lot of feedback on that.
Oh yeah, a lot of feedback.
Definitely, I'm like, oh, so this is how you feel about it, kind of a deal. So yeah,
I think what's been interesting that I've like been slowly picking up is the differences between ages and genders.
Yes.
Those are the ones with the biggest like opposite view. Mm-hmm. Like the older you get and different genders have completely different outlooks. So it was really interesting. I liked the conversations that I was having.
Yeah, I agree. And hopefully this sparks the conversation in your circle, because this is still a discussion, as you'll learn, this is still a discussion that needs to be had and talked about and recognized.
Absolutely.
So,
So before we get started, if you haven't followed us and this is your first time listening, go ahead and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
Yeah.
At Melanin Speaking Podcast. Yes. We have that beautiful bright yellow with that gorgeous flower. Yes. You can't miss us.
You can't.
We're pretty bright.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's go ahead and jump into this topic. Colorism. So not to confuse colorism with racism, we brought up the definition for colorism so that way we can stay on point on it. Colorism: prejudice and discrimination against individuals with a dark skin tone, typically among people of the same ethnic or racial group.
Yes.
Yep. Which is a little bit different from racism, right? So like racism is kind of outside of the group. It's not as insular as colorism really is. So that's kind of the main difference. It's just, are you being discriminated against, or mm-hmm. are you holding prejudice against people who are within your actual racial group, which mm-hmm. is kind of interesting.
Yeah, because I definitely like when having conversations, especially to my mom, we somehow jumped out of the line of colorism, mm-hmm. and then somehow we stepped into racism, and then I had to like, we both have to backtrack of like, whoa. We're staying into our ethnic group, which
I think it's so easy to do that, mm-hmm. because I like to call colorism racism's little ugly stepchild. because without colorism, or without racism, excuse me, there would be no colorism, right? Like,
yeah,
it all, that's the seed from which the tree grows.
Mm-hmm.
So absolutely. Actually talking about that, we can go a little bit into the history of, you know, what is colorism and how it kind of started and grew from racism. You know, a lot of our history around slavery or in relation to colorism is kind of this, you know, in the house, you know, Negroes versus field Negroes. That's kind of been the biggest thing, right?
Yeah.
And I think that that does play a part, absolutely. But I think that it is a multitude of things and how it kind of, I guess, filters down. Mm. So not only did we have that kind of separation, we also did it with, you know, men fighting, and you know, the darker ones would be considered the big bucks and things of that nature. So I think that it goes into a lot of things. You have the master slave dynamic even within like lighter skinned men. There were some recounts of that, and I think a lot of it is kind of rooted back to the emotional trauma that you get from being removed from one society and placed into a different society. and how you have to navigate that. And when you see whiteness being at the top, you start to associate that over time, obviously. You start to associate that with being better. And it's kind of like that internalized racism. So that's kind of the history on it, as well as, you know, obviously slavery was the biggest thing, but that's kind of the history on how it kind of got started, at least in the African-American community.
And I'll say, in perspective from the Latino community, I mean, so when we talk about colorism and we mention colorism, a lot of people within your own race are going to be like, oh, I can't be that. I can't be racist. I can't be this because I am a part of that oppressed group. So that's not about me. And Latinos have a very complicated way of connecting that, because so technically we aren't labeled as a race. So Latinos aren't, we are an ethnicity. So automatically that's going to mean for a lot of Latinos, oh, we can't be racist.
Right.
Right.
Interesting. Yes. That's interesting to think of.
Mm-hmm. And so like one of the common things that I see is when we talk about race and we talk about all this stuff, Latinos are very color conscious about, you know, what they're doing, how they see themselves, you know, what kind of Latino are you? I mean, we have tons of slang words for it, right?
Yeah.
So because we don't identify with the race, then technically we label, you know, based on hair type, skin color, facial issues, would all fall more under colorism than it would be racism for our group specifically, which is kind of what colorism is. But so, I mean, yeah, no, that's definitely one of the things.
Now, I do have one question within the Latino community, because I genuinely don't know.
Right.
Would it be considered, or do you feel like it would be considered colorism the way that some Latinos remove themselves from being connected to maybe indigenous Americans or even, you know, Africans that kind of maybe got mixed into the, you know, Hispanic Latino culture?
Yeah.
But like, you know, because it brings to mind like the Amada La Negras, you know what I mean? And though she is, if I'm not mistaken, Dominican, I think she is.
I believe so, yeah.
Okay. Where you have some people who are Dominican and, you know, say like, yes, I do have African roots. And then you have another group of Dominicans who are like, and they can be the exact same skin tone and be like, actually, I'm not African at all. Yes. Like, would that, do you think so that plays into the colorism?
That's a big part of it. Because of the Spanish and even the slave trade, the whole region of, you know, Central South America, especially the islands, got hit the hardest with it. Because you got to think, if the Spanish are coming over there and, you know, one, they're not like any other form of what we do in America, well, I guess some part of it, but they are basically more like the Deep South did, where it's like, no, we're going to kind of wipe out these natives because this is our land. You guys have resources we want, right? Wow. So already that's, you're going to get your little white mix in there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The slave trade happened. And so now that's like a pit stop.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
They dropped a lot of people.
Exactly. Haiti. Yeah. So basically, when we think about that, like nations like Haiti and the Dominican Republic right next to each other, they do have a lot of that colorism issue, because you do have Afro-Latinas and Afro-Latinos that consider themselves and kind of empower themselves with the black and melanin that they have in them, versus the Latinos that are more on the Spanish side. They're like, no, I'm not like that, because that is more poor, that is more, and it's related to that, and the same related to behaviors. So within the Latino community, yes, very much so, because in Mexico, the same with the Native Americans or Indians versus the Spanish led, right? So there's a whole lot of mixing.
I think that's a very interesting point that I don't know, I don't feel like it's very talked about in mainstream, or at least, how about this, American-centric mainstream, you know what I mean? I'm sure if I were, you know, actually listening or watching more Spanish channels, or at least kept up with what's going on outside of my own country, I have to admit, sometimes I can be not great at that.
Mm-hmm. I think we all, I think America is not great at that.
Well, that's true.
We got a lot going on.
Yeah, for real. But I think that is something that we don't talk about within, you know, just that community, of how even taking a step back and being like, actually, I'm different. And I think it's really, really interesting. And I didn't realize that Latino or Latina is not an ethnicity per se. Like,
no, it's not a race.
It's not a race. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. It's not a race, but it's an ethnicity. And I was like, that was kind of odd to me.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. But who projected that? Who decided that?
So when you do your census, when you do paperwork for a job, when you do any kind of paperwork, we're a separate question.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because I think, one, they realize what side of the globe you're on, you know, Central, South America, all that, literally south of, you know, the United States is all Latino. And there's different kind of mixings. I think their idea is like, oh, that's not a race because they all kind of are the same, but they're not the same. You know, I think it was just one of those things where they just started doing and some white man was like, oh, this is okay to do. And now it's just kept up.
Great. So we don't actually, you know, care about your individualism as a country. We just gonna say that y'all all from that region. So that's what y'all is.
Exactly. Basically laziness.
And so, like, I always brought up, especially so when it comes to filling out forms, I always brought up the perspective of like, okay, so within the race category, you can choose multiple. You don't have to just choose one, right?
Yeah.
So why
or other.
So why are we a whole separate question, first of all? Second of all, when I was growing up and I was taught to fill out these forms, like in school and stuff, you know how sometimes they'll have you fill it out?
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, okay, yeah, you're Latino, mark that. But then when it came to the race section, they're like, oh, you're white, mark white. And so in my head, I'm like, but I'm not white.
Really?
Wow. Yes. Well, so
I mean, if you look at the forms and now
like, I'm trying to remember that we're
recalling that. Yeah. I do remember where you could have the race as like, you know, black, and then a separate question would be like non-Hispanic or Hispanic, which means you can be a Hispanic black or a Hispanic white or, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But that is a separate. That is so true. It's,
yes. And so like when we think about within that, so if you're mixed, if you're white and you're black, under race, you're going to hit white and African-American or black. And that's it. Right. Wow. But where is it with us? I honestly do not know the answer to this question because it literally bugs me. And I've had so many discussions with people about it. And honestly, the end result is, well, it's always been done like that. So we can't change it now.
Change? What is change? We don't like it.
This isn't an issue. And some people do see it that way. So some Latinos will leverage that. So they'll be like, yes, I am Latino. And then when it comes to race, they can literally pick whichever other one they want to, depending on, you know, what kind of resources they want. So for me, it would be more beneficial to put that I'm white versus putting that I'm African versus putting that I'm Native American. You can literally pick it.
You have to unlearn what the school system taught you. I could never imagine.
We love our public school system.
But yeah, talking about like how the government always has its hands in how we discuss these things, right? Because like, once again, going back to like that racism was so ingrained into our, you know, systems that it started off putting little colorist things out there, like not being able to choose your actual, you know, race and heritage and ethnicity. I think that's very weird. And our government is always kind of fiddling like that. And what's interesting to me is that that kind of started here in Tennessee a little bit.
Yeah. Well, when we were doing research for this podcast, a colorism podcast, you would do and run across the phrase, the one drop rule. And I had to do research and figure out where this was founded. And guess what? Here in Tennessee, in our local community, the one drop rule was adopted as a law until the 20th century, first in Tennessee in 1910. And it went on for a very, very long time. And the law had two goals. It was to make anyone who wasn't white not human. They could take you out of schools, they could take your rights away, and they can treat you like a lesser than a human being. And this went on for a very long time, and it was founded here. We were talking about the history of racism and slavery, and you know the South is big, but to have the one drop rule, which is something that you can point to anytime when you're talking about colorism, the main point and the main hierarchy that was used in the United States of America to make it legal and to make it widely known and accepted.
And I feel like the one drop rule is really popular. Like, you can hear about that on, you know, click on any lecture that has anything to do with racism or, you know, colorism within America. They're going to mention the one drop rule, though I have never heard it mentioned that it was actually, you know, started here in Tennessee. I never knew that. That was definitely something interesting to find out. So I think the one drop rule really kind of lays the groundwork for what comes next, and that's kind of introduced into the American psyche, right? So, like, from the one drop rule, we get the brown paper bag test.
Right. Mm-hmm. I remember that.
So, you know, once we kind of lay the groundwork of that one drop rule of no matter what you might have established in your life, the second we find out that you're a little bit brown or a little bit, you know, other, mm-hmm. you're automatically considered lower class. Mm-hmm. We're going to take everything. And so I think it kind of sets the precedent of, like, you know, the whole theory about passing, right? Like, if somebody back in those days passed as white, you couldn't pass as white and still talk to your mom. Mm-hmm. Or you can't pass as white and still talk to your, like, obviously black sisters or obviously black brothers. Like, mm-hmm. you have to cut those people off.
Yeah. I think a lot of the fair, lighter skin individuals had a, and this is an opinion, I think they had a harder time because not only, like, the darker skinned people kind of didn't accept them, they felt like they had a more advantage than they did. And then the lighter skin also were still fighting with the Caucasian individuals because the Caucasian individuals think, oh no, you have not all white in you, so you're not part of my society, please.
You're basically illegitimate at that point because you're like the kid that the slave owner did the slave with.
Right.
Now you got to be held responsible mm-hmm. for it.
Absolutely.
So it's like you're what kind of babies? They have like a name for it, like slave owner babies, like
they called them mulattoes. Mm-hmm. They called them
that's right.
Mm-hmm. Mixed breed. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, there's
it just had a hard
there's
time.
There's a lot of little disgusting names for them. Yeah. But that kind of I think that also sets the groundwork for the separation mm-hmm. of like because if you're light enough, you have to appear completely white. So you have to completely let go of your black identity, and you have to think about that from. I think looking back, we think about it from both perspectives, right? Like mm-hmm. like you said, it's hard for the light-skinned person mm-hmm. because this person has to basically completely cut off that they're black and mm-hmm. assimilate to this new white culture and mm-hmm. things like that. But then you have to think about how does that make that black family feel? Mm-hmm. In order for that person to reach any type of level of success in society, you have to deny yourself, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And so with like any denial or rejection of something, the person getting rejected feels hurt. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, so you think you over there now, so you're too good for us. And so that mentality.
The mentality just becomes stronger than I am better. I am better than you. Mm-hmm. My hair is better. My skin looks better. Like, I am going to have better jobs than you. I'm going to get married before you kind mm-hmm. of mentality. So,
and it all trickles down. It got passed down and passed down and passed down.
Definitely.
And here we are, you know, X amount of years later, still having these same conversations and having these very, very similar struggles.
Yeah.
Not necessarily where, you know, we're not getting
along.
Right. We're
not
still,
hating.
There still is
right.
There's a gap.
But there still is that separation and that gap and the uncomfortableness around not having that conversation. Like, nobody wants to breach that conversation. A light-skinned person doesn't want to breach it, and a dark-skinned person don't want to talk about it either.
But I will backtrack a little bit because, you know, we talk about, you know, society basically affirming all these things, and we got to realize our government was doing it too. You mentioned the brown paper bag test. I mean, for people that don't know, that basically just they're going to hold up a brown paper bag to you. Where are you on this scale?
Exactly.
Where are you on this? Are you privileged enough to be a little bit above it? I mean, exactly. Even not, they're going to get a lighter brown paper bag, to be honest. Mm-hmm. So just knowing that, like you're saying, all these things affirm these people's beliefs, affirm everything. And that play such a huge part in our colorism today. Mm-hmm. Because if everybody before you is thinking like, oh no, that's how it is, that's how the, you know, system's set up, and unfortunately we all got to deal with it, then mm-hmm. why would we all of a sudden think that, one, colorism isn't a real thing and it's not happening?
Absolutely.
And if it's not happening, why are we talking about it? Why do we think that, say, for example, my fair sister, why do I feel like she gets more of an advantage than I, kind of a deal? It's just those thought process, and then you get to continue thinking, well, what does she have that I don't? And mm-hmm. then you see, oh, well, she's got beautiful skin. My mm-hmm. skin may not be beautiful to another individual, mm-hmm. or her hair is a lot more finer and coarser than mine, you know? And that goes into, like, our, at least the Black community, separating our hair into hair groups.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. that texturism is a real thing.
Honey. And for me, it's like when I go shopping for products for my hair, it's like, oh, it's going to be better for like a 4B, 4A kind of girl. But I am a hardcore 4C, low porosity or proxity, however you say it. And I gotta get that grease. I gotta get that thicker course, which yeah. it's like, it's also more expensive.
Mm-hmm. And that's sometimes, I mean, it does get expensive. And even on the packaging now, mm-hmm. like,
yes,
you have the light skin girl mm-hmm. with these very loose curls. And then you go, oh, but this is actually for like your 4C hair. And it's like, sis, where?
Wait, and you put it in your hair. You've already paid the price for right. it. And it's like, oh, no.
So it bleeds into everything, though you're making a product for me. You think in order for me to buy it, there needs to be this unattainable beauty, mm-hmm. which translate into lighter skin, looser curls. And with that, that's that attainability. So, ooh, if I get this product, my hair will look like that.
So this brings back, I don't know if you guys watch this on Netflix, but the Madam C.J. Walker.
Yes, we did.
Yes.
Girl, yes, we did.
So this is so like good. One of the key things of colorism, right? So yeah. they told her, oh, you're not the achievable Black people want to be. So, you know, this product's not going to sell. And she's like, hold on, but I'm selling real product for real women.
For actual women who have coarser, thicker, kinkier hair. Yes.
And not just that, but also working women. Because a lot of those hair products and stuff, they were supposed to be for the ladies of leisure, the ones who kind
That's right.
Which is why it was depicted as mm-hmm. being light skinned, because you're pretty enough in white society mm-hmm. to obtain that level. You deserve to lounge around and be pretty.
Oh yeah.
But as a dark skin and heavier set,
you gotta Black keep woman, behind doors, keep in shadows. No, you, because in that time, and I love that show for portraying it, in that time, if a darker woman come up to me and is trying to sell some kind of hair products, but I'm trying to look like a lighter skin woman, exactly. I'm thinking the products that's in your basket, it's really for you, and you're not really benefiting me. I already look like you. I'm trying to look lighter.
Right. I'm trying to look better.
Yeah. And so I think just it's crazy how I'm also trying to get straighter hair in that sense. Yeah. And I think remembering back in my time, relaxers were a thing.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, how you had to
that
sit there.
That creamy crack.
Ooh, that creamy crack. Good old creamy crack, right? And just sitting there as your mom rubs the Vaseline around your
Oh, girl.
And just sitting there getting that straight, silky. Yes. To go from that thickness.
Yes.
To basically your hair is laying flat.
Baby.
Yeah, well, my mom started me off pretty young, so I didn't even know how important it was, because I just had a lot of hair. She was young, I was young, and she was like, girl, you have way too much hair. It is way too mm-hmm. thick. I broke way too many combs. And she was like, I'm going to start doing relaxers. I think I was 10 or 11. So I did that for a very long time, you know, most of my teenage years, and I never thought it was important. And so I was like in these white spaces with this flat hair and my lighter skin complexion, yeah. and I was hanging around so many white people, and I was like, I don't feel like I'm acting like myself. I feel like I'm flicking my hair, and it's like, this isn't me. Mm-hmm. This is not. And I had to do some reflection, but I think you lose yourself when you're trying to chase this idea of beauty, this idea of fitting in, this idea of all of that. And then I finally chopped my hair off in junior year, and I was like, yeah, this is me. I'm rocking a curly mohawk.
And I think, like, doing that is inspiration within itself. Okay, so this really
bothers
me. Yes. Yeah, that's the word I'm going to use, bothers. Because I feel like Google is free, okay?
Who is free?
Google.
Okay.
Juju. It's free. Google. It is free. And so we have a rapper named Young Mulatto or Big...
Big Lotto.
Big no.
It's just Mulatto.
Mulatto.
Okay.
But Mulatto in the beginning of her inserts of songs is Big Lotto. Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. You literally have a girl calling herself Mulatto.
Which means, if you don't know, an individual who has one white parent and one black parent.
Yes. And which also in Spanish, it's called Mulata. So the origins can literally be traced down to that too. I mean,
most words in Spanish sound sexy. Yeah, and then you find out they're English.
Find out what it means, and it's not so much that anymore.
But yeah, you have this woman parading around. And you know what? I'm cool with her music. I'm not going to say that I don't like her as an artist. She has some bops that I can bop around to in the car. I don't hate the girl. I have no malintent toward that woman. How so and ever? Why in God's green earth would you? I feel like that's just like, I'm light skinned. I'm half mixed, so I'm out here. Like,
I mean, but basically,
it's that separation.
That's what it is. I mean, but she put this in an interview on YouTube, where she was saying she grew up in a certain area where she was picked on for being biracial, and then she took it to where she's just gonna use that name to be like a statement, like, okay, I am black and white. And she said she had a discussion with her parents first before she came out and started making on her music, just for their aspects. But I think also, in a way, we didn't really know that it was a derogatory term until an older generation had to say something.
But you Google the word mulatto and it literally says offensive.
Thus, Google is furry.
I don't even think, just from learning, it'd be different if, and this is my own opinion, it'd be different if she's like, okay, I'm gonna make a statement and try to reclaim this word. But she actively doesn't really talk about it, minus one interview on YouTube.
Thank you. It's
bring awareness to it.
Exactly. It's not as if she's bringing in other women into the conversation as to why she decided to refer to herself. She says it occasionally, like once in a blue moon. But then on the backhand, when somebody's calling her out for some colorist BS, she goes, well, I'm black.
Right.
Mm. But then shouts from the moon tubs, I'm mulatto, I'm big lotto.
Because she is asked which race she...
And I don't think that's fair.
Yeah.
If you're a mixed person who has a black parent and a white parent or any other combination, you should be allowed. You should have the right to both heritages and both cultures. That is yours. I'm totally with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But do it. So like, stemming from this, right? When we talk about rapping in general, we talk about music in general, words.
Words do have meaning, but yet we let certain individuals get away with it.
Men. And
yeah, men are super bad about it. We are just now reclaiming the word bitch as women, you know?
True.
So, I mean, in this sense, are we being too hard on rapper Mulatto? Should we...
I mean, she's 22 years old. I was just looking that up and seeing how young she is. Like,
so then, yeah.
I mean, I give her a pass.
I'm not going to give her a pass. You're a public figure. Right. And whether you realize it or not, that means that you have a really big platform and you got kids looking up to you. I know that it's not fair, but that's the life you signed up for when you decided to become a big time rapper, A.
Like, pedaling back. Okay. So we have a lot to say about Mulatto. But just reclaiming words, like we are going to assume that she may try to do as she gets older and more wise and learns kind of the power that she has in her platform. What about these other slang terms that we do for colorism? Like,
let's read some.
Yeah. So if you don't know.
You have Pickaninny. You have Barbie. You have High Yellow Heifer. Tar Baby.
I'm sorry. That's not funny.
It's not.
It's a little
high funny. Yellow heifer,
tar baby, wannabe white, jigaboo, mulatto, as we've already said, and then
moreno, India, habao, blanco, negro. Those are all Spanish ones that I hear a lot through our community as well. So colorism kind of just in general, we have to be aware with these words, how we use them, because a lot of times we do use them to pick out like specific characteristics for people. And I'll give you an example. So like my mom and the way we grew up is if you were called India, that literally means you have Indian features. So it's negative because you're not supposed to have a big nose. You're not supposed to have curly and woolly hair. You're not supposed to have darker skin. So words like that and reclaim. And now within the Latinx community, they're trying to reclaim that indigenous because I think we strayed too much from our culture. And now we're trying to push it back a little bit and be like, hey, no, this is ours. We see a lot of Frida. A lot of people relate Frida to that kind of colorism because she was a white face bringing in Indian culture and Native culture to Mexico as her own. And a lot of people, there's a lot of controversy on that because some people are like, oh, well, she's empowering it. And then on the Indian side, they're like, no, she's taking it for her own and she hasn't really given us enough credit for it.
I think that's the scary part with some of the color, because I think colorism can be used for good, right? Mm-hmm. So if you know you are of that look, that lighter skin with, you know, beautiful soft curls, you can maneuver in the world in a different way, right? Yeah. So like you might get into spaces where a visibly person of color, like if I can look at you and be like, you're not white, you're not there. Mm-hmm. You can maneuver in those places still, you know? And so where is the line where I'm bringing people in versus I'm taking what's yours and I'm putting a white face on it? Because I think we see that in the Black community as well as, okay, so there's a, like right now, Black fishing is like huge.
Explain.
Yeah, what is that?
Black fishing? You've never heard?
I've never heard of black fishing.
Please educate me.
Yes.
Okay, so black fishing is where you have either lighter skin Latinas or lighter skin, well, white women flat out, or super lighter skin black women who will alter their appearance. So use darker foundation, tanning quite a bit to kind of give that.
We see that a
light
lot.
Skin, for lack of a better word, kind of mulatto look. Mm. Even though they are naturally pale.
I didn't know that was called black.
Are we talking
fishing.
About the Kardashians or?
So they're the queens of black fishing. Right. They do it, but they don't do it quite as aggressively with the makeup. A lot of these, especially on Instagram and things like that, a lot of these girls are full fledged changing the color of their skin to look mixed. And so I think like that's interesting within colorism too, right? Like
how
you have white people who now want to be mixed looking, at least like they don't really want to be mixed, but they want to be mixed adjacent, so they'll put on slightly darker foundation or they'll go tanning quite a bit. They'll do
gym tan laundry,
for real. They'll do like the tighter curls and, you know, the dress, even, and they, you know, dress a certain ethnic way. And then, you know, they also do the black speak where they talk like this, you know what I'm saying? I'm all hood. But in reality, they talk like this. And it's like, ooh, boo. You know what I mean? And you just sound it like they do it a lot on TikTok, especially with the blackfishing of the voices and stuff like that. So that is an interesting, I think, turn in our pop culture is for years and years and years, we've put light skin on a pedestal in comparison to darker skin. And now it's even being put on a pedestal in comparison. And in some spaces, at least in the black spaces, it's over being white. Like girls aren't fixing their bodies to look white anymore.
they're whitening their skin.
Right. Like, girls are fixing their bodies to look biracial or, like, a little bit of, you know.
But then on the flip side of that corn.
Yeah. That's what I was trying to get to.
Is the skin whitening, right? So within our own community, since in general, the pedestal is to be a little bit dark, but not too dark.
Right.
Still a little bit white. You got small features.
Yep.
You got porcelain doll features. Mm-hmm. You got straight hair.
We love it.
A little bit of wave is fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now that's that still a thing.
Do you think that's still skin bleaching?
Oh, skin bleaching is 100,000% still a thing. It's just not as big, and it's definitely not talked about in America. Mm-hmm. But you go worldwide, skin bleaching is a thing everywhere. And I do mean everywhere. I'm talking India, China, Japan, mm-hmm. Korea, Africa, the Caribbean, mm-hmm. Latinx communities. Mm-hmm. When you go on down Southern America, mm-hmm. it's all up and through there.
Yeah.
This is a multi-billion-dollar
industry.
What's so sad to know, though? Because you have individuals who are working hard to portray to younger girls and guys that your skin is beautiful. Mm-hmm. Now, I can understand the fact, and that will be going off to a... No.
I think I agree with you on that one, but we also have to realize that's happening in America right now, and maybe even parts of Europe, where we kind of set the tone for what is acceptable globally and rising in your status.
Mm.
So right now we see the big movement of what happened in the 70s, where it's like natural hair, empowerment. Yeah. Yep. This is what it is now,
mm-hmm.
you know, but that's here.
Yes.
And I'll even extend it to parts of Europe and maybe even Canada.
Mm.
Everywhere else that follows the lead of what we set the tone to be, haven't gotten there yet. Because I mean, like Chelsea was saying, like in Asia, I know in Korea, the darker you are, that means you're, even though you all are Korean, right,
mm-hmm.
the darker you are gonna be the working class. You're mm-hmm. never gonna be a K-pop star or something like that. No, you're gonna be the working class, and that's where you kind of are gonna stay. You're not gonna really move unless you maybe bleach your skin or you know, maybe make your eyes a little bit bigger and less hooded. Like, so it's stuff like that, that, you know, we are really good at doing is setting the tone for the rest of the world to catch up, which now, like you're saying, your skin is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the movement we're seeing now.
Yeah. And that might take a few years for America to export because we export our society, our culture. Yeah. Like that's our biggest input to the world. It's mm-hmm. be like us, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? So in this moment, we're trying to undo years and years and years in our own society of colorism, you know, racism, internalized colorism, things that we deal with.
Well, to build on what you guys were talking about, do you think if you were that Black Nigerian person who came into America, would you choose a lighter skinned woman, or would you choose someone who looks...
And that's where I'm saying, we treat darker men different than if our darker Nigerian woman came over.
But that's still Americans. So you're looking at it from a very American view, which I understand. Most people in America, they look at things from an American view. But if you are a Nigerian woman
mm-hmm.
who are born into a village in Nigeria,
mm-hmm.
you make it out that village. Let's say you dumb smart. Okay, you make it out. You're in this workforce. You go to uni. You get all your education. You're now entering the workforce, and you're finding, no matter though that you have all the job qualifications, mm-hmm. you cannot break through. You are not getting a job. You're seeing the girl who just started bleaching 2 years ago. She got a job. The light skinned girl who was naturally born like that. She got a job. All these other women who are lighter than you. Some might be browner skin. I'm not saying every single light person in Nigeria is guaranteed a job, but it definitely gives you an edge. So you're looking around and you're going, okay, so I can start lightening or I can take these crappy jobs that I'm overqualified for, save up a little money and go to Europe, because a lot of Africans stop over in Europe at some point. They do. So I go to Europe, and Europe is just the gateway to get Me Too America for, you know, a portion of them.
So hitting on the note that Jordan hit, because she said, why are black, like, okay, for this instance, in Nigeria, to come in here and getting a lighter skin woman. So let's think about that. If in my own country, lighter skin people were proven to have more resources and opportunities, if I were to have a kid with somebody, I would prefer them to be lighter. So,
yeah, that was
yeah, unconsciously too. Maybe or subconsciously, whatever. You would probably be like, no, let me go ahead and go with this attractive young light-skinned woman mm-hmm. versus a dark-skinned woman, because then I put my kid at risk of having to go through the same hardships as I did, which I think generally is how people think, right? Yeah. So yeah, when we see these really dark, chocolatey men with really light-skinned women, I think that's almost like a learned behavior they didn't realize they had. Like, it's just one of those biases where they know how it works, but they don't want to admit that's how they're thinking.
It's so integrated. I mean, and also you have to think one of the reasons why black men are, or at least darker skinned black men in America, I'm going to specify that, in America, they're seen as these sex symbols and like gorgeous. And
I mean, SNL just did a skit where like these divorced white women went to Africa to get a black man.
Okay.
To have some fun.
But the gag is that's basically 90 Day Fiance. I digress. But the reason why it was, I don't want to say it's a PR campaign, but once again, America outsources their society. So when rap became big here, cut to a few years later, rap became big everywhere else. Who's the faces of rap? Most of the time, dark skinned black guys. Mm-hmm. So black men became desirable. Oh, they got money, bling mm-hmm. bling, fast cars, sexy women. But you notice who were the women that was next to them the entire mm-hmm. time.
Yeah, so as four beautiful women, we got two darker skinned women, we got a Latino ex,
Latinx.
We have a Latinx woman. I consider myself a lighter skinned person, I guess. We've all been in the dating realm. Well, do we have any individual stories about colorism in our dating life?
So dating wise, I honestly think most of mine come from more racism than anything else, but I'll hit on I guess it plays into colorism. I take that back. So if you are in a Latinx family, and especially if you are a female that is lighter skin, you don't want to mix the race with somebody who's darker. And so it's such a prevalent thing in our community that we even have a term for it in Spanish, right? So mejora la raza. So you don't, basically, it's just you ain't mixing the race. Don't bring home anyone that's darker than you. Especially don't bring home a black person. That's where it gets into racism. But within your own community, you don't want to bring home somebody that's darker than you. Mm. And that's just kind of almost what you're taught and
accepted.
Yeah. Inadvertently, you don't realize that even when you start dating, you have those biases in your head already.
I can say I haven't dated, but when I did have like crushes or I liked a guy, as a kid, I would say I didn't like darker guys. Mm-hmm. And that was more for me a psychological thing.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. my dad wasn't the best role model dad for me. Mm-hmm. And so I, as a kid, presume darker men ain't shit. mm-hmm. It's basically. And I'm more attractive of your personality. And that could be everybody. I'm into... Excuse me, I'm into all men. Don't want to say everybody.
I'm into everybody.
That would be a whole new topic. But no, it was for me more of a psychological, mental thinking of the way I was growing up.
And that's colorism in itself.
My mom is a lighter individual, and she did marry a darker man.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking, oh, well, at first, darker men aren't only into lighter women. Mm-hmm. As I see my mom and under other individuals, but then I see darker men not and not all of you, calm down, but the one that I know personally just didn't treat you in the sense that a dad should treat you. Mm-hmm. And it stuck with me. And so I, and looking back at not only my mom's relationships, but my friends' relationships, and just going through all that, I mentally did not want to do that. I think I was dating through them. Mm-hmm. And I already, I was just like, no, I rather have my own money, mm-hmm. be my own woman, independent Black woman. Mm-hmm. I just don't have the mentality to deal with that.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So that, for me, that was my colorism experience. Like, I mean, don't get me wrong, I still swipe on Tinder, I'll still entertain you. Right. If it's me, if like, if you say something dumb to me,
yeah,
if you, you know, DTF or whatever else these people say, I'm like, dang, like, I just said hi. And now at that point, I'm just like, okay, I'm moving on.
As you should. Mm-hmm. If somebody types out DTF, you should basically tell them to go fuck themselves. I don't care what color, creed, anything, you can properly go fuck yourself, sir. That's just my opinion. I don't.
The first message, DTF, okay, yeah. So delete.
That's a whole nother episode of Yikes. Just right. the disrespect on
messages on you get on media. Tinder.
So Chelsea, did you have a story?
Yeah, so I don't think my story is necessarily within dating, right? Like, I've dated men who have told me about their quite colorist pasts. Mm-hmm. I've dated a man who was like, yeah, when I was younger, you know, he was in his 30s. And he was like, when I was younger, it was light-skinned everything. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. I did not want a dark-skinned nothing. Mm-hmm. And so for him, what changed his mind was, so he was one of those guys who maybe not wanted to be seen in public with dark-skinned women, but he was definitely still with dark-skinned women.
Yeah. In the dark.
And so one of those beautiful ladies got pregnant.
Uh-oh.
And he had a dark-skinned daughter. And that kind of rattled him in a way where it was like, you know, how could I automatically say dark-skinned women are ugly, they're this, they're that, having all these opinions. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And he was like, and then I turn around and I look in the face of my daughter and mm-hmm. it's like, he couldn't basically mesh those two worlds, right? He couldn't keep with the same ideology of like, oh, lighter is better.
Exactly.
And still raise a dark-skinned daughter.
Because you mm-hmm. also have to think, his mom is a dark-skinned woman.
100%.
So how can you say lighter is better? Are you just degrading your own mother? And I know there's a lot of men out there who are mama boys. And ain't no way you are saying that about her. So it always shocks me when they're like, oh, yeah, I want a lighter woman. They're better. They're, you know, they this, this, and this. And I mean, so what was your mother?
Or they come up to a Black woman and say, you're so pretty for a dark-skinned girl.
Excuse me?
Yeah. I've actually had that line used on me, and I was just like, oh, wow, interesting. Mm-hmm.
Okay, move on.
I think the worst dating story that I have. So I was dating a biracial man. And I have to admit my biases. When I was younger, I was like, fuck these light-skinned niggas. I was not about it. I was like, if you're light-skinned, I'm good on you, boo. I either want them burnt chocolate or pale white, because I also have a small thing for redheads. I love me a
oh, my God.
Pale men. Like, I don't know. It's hey, a thing. I don't know. But, you know, and I've since grown past that and dealt mm-hmm. with some issues. So I was dating a light-skinned man, mm-hmm. biracial man, you know, and I was meeting his family. We were, like, hanging out, and his brother happened to come over. And his brother's girlfriend was Filipino, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. And so they got into this conversation about, like, nativism and, like, African, you know, versus, like, African-American, blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah. And he, like, swiveled his dumb face around and was like, yeah, I got me an authentic African here. And, like, ooh. Patted my shoulder.
Oh, no.
And I just kind of looked up like,
this motherfucker.
He said what? He called you what?
He called me an authentic African, which, side note, I was born in Chicago. Ain't nothing authentic or African about my black.
I'm just, and the fact that I'm, he tapped you on American. The shoulder?
On the shoulder. Like he was like, a compliment, too.
Without a doubt, he thought it was. And I remember in my head, I was like, okay.
Right there, I wouldn't have been in a book. The fuck?
Oh, honey, do you think that relationship lasted more than that day? It was pretty much done after that.
Right.
You know, just for that situation to happen, it was like, you know, a kind of slap in the face of like, wow, okay, that was super freaking rude and super colorist because he's within my community. Mm-hmm. And because I was a few shades darker, all of a sudden I'm an authentic African.
Yeah. That's ridiculous.
So, you know, it plays out into the way that colorism bleeds.
But I will say, kind of stemming from what you just hit, because you didn't want to be perceived as ghetto and unruly and just mad, loud black woman, where does that come from? Because I think that is pretty much instilled from the colorism within our families.
Oh, for sure.
Because our families teach us like, oh, you can't act like that. But then they correlate it inadvertently with color.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean.
So we're saying that the term mad black woman came for our insider family.
Ooh.
I think that it maybe not necessarily in our inside of our family, but I definitely think it came from inside of the black community. I'd say that. Absolutely.
I think it came from black men. I kind of want to say it's like us being too outspoken or too, you know, trying to, I don't know, emasculate them. Just like, you're just mad, you're so loud, I can't, just dismissing us. And I think it did come, I mean, it might become definitely white men, black men, but I think it's a male issue that women are working through now. Mm-hmm. That was a fun thing to think about. Because I never thought about the origin of that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it definitely comes, I don't know what gender started it, right? But I definitely think it
is. Definitely not us.
Well, not the angry black woman, but I think that we started the strong black woman trope. And I think, in all honesty, that can be just as dangerous.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't allow you the space for vulnerability, and everybody needs vulnerability.
That's true.
I feel like, though, just because you're saying you're strong doesn't mean that you don't show vulnerability. You're meaning that you're an individual who aren't going to take much crap from you.
I mean,
or you're working as hard as the next individual. It's what I'm taking in as a strong black woman.
That's how it should be taken.
Exactly. Because if you think, oh, because I say I'm strong, I can handle it, I don't show any emotions, then you're wrong. Because I can still show tears. But then again, I'll say, don't take my tears as a sign of weakness. It's me just, okay.
I'm the same way.
You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I think in a lot of people, when, for me, I angry cry.
Mm-hmm.
I say, baby girl, don't think, you know, I still won't speak my truth. But it's because I'm so passionate about what's happening, it doesn't make me any lesser than a strong black woman.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I show yeah.
I think we're just now getting to that.
Thank you.
Everything you're saying, I think, are things that we have really seen a bigger presence in everything around us in the last 5 years.
I agree.
Because growing up, I was taught, don't cry.
Yep.
You don't show emotion.
Yep.
You will not be that crazy Latina. You are going to talk as clearly as you can.
Mm-hmm.
They will not be able to, like, you will be this brick wall, basically. Yes. And I think what you're hitting on is us unlearning those things from childhood, mm-hmm. and it finally being okay to show emotion, to be strong and also vulnerable.
Yeah, because, I mean, mm-hmm. I think about, like, pop culture and even like familial ties, like the women in my family, like, they weren't criers.
Mm-mm.
You know what I mean? All. Like, and it's definitely that unlearning, because I've unlearned a lot of it, because for a long time I feel like strong black woman was a synonym for like pack mule. So mm-hmm. you can hurt them. You can, and I mean, and in all honesty, yes. it goes all the way back to make it full circle. It goes all the way back to slavery, mm-hmm. down to, oh, well, black women don't feel pain like other women do.
No. The hell? You can't break them.
Right. You can't break them. So you can rape them. You can beat them. You can, you know, chain them up. And so it flipping to now, yeah, she can clean, cook, work a full-time job, raise all the children. You know, if you're in your traditional black home, you know, making sure the man is properly taken care of. He doesn't lift a finger. And all the while she's drowning, but she's not allowed to show that. I mean, it's been in how many movies? Tyler Perry has literally made millions off of the strong black woman trope, which irritates the... Okay. He made millions off of it.
But to even go on to your rant for this, honestly, the way Tyler Perry portrays darker skinned women versus light skinned women.
Or darker skinned men versus light skinned men, because he does that all the time. The dark skinned woman is normally the crazy bitter sister mm-hmm. or best friend or sidekick of some kind. Mm-hmm. The light skinned woman is always being abused, whether it be verbally, physically, mentally, emotionally,
but by a dark skinned. But ridiculously the prettiest one, right?
Yeah, but she's always going to be abused by a dark skinned man.
Oh yeah,
and then a light skinned man is always going to come and save her. Mm-hmm. And that is 98% of Tyler Perry's like scripts. Mm-hmm. And that is very clearly colorism in how, and I mean, he's not the only one. No. Like Martin Lawrence made millions off of it in the 90s mm-hmm. with the whole Pam and Gina situation. Every time Pam walked into the door, and let's not get it twisted, Pam was freaking gorgeous. Have you seen that woman? I think I don't know her real name. I'm so sorry. But the woman was absolutely stunning, dressed amazing, looked amazing. And every time she came through the door, yo, black ass, mm-hmm. yo, monkey ass, yo, you know, there's always a she so dark joke. Mm-hmm.
There's so many examples in our media, in our music, and in our community.
Relating all of this back to media and everything, how can we in our own communities be better about our colorism? Is it a discussion like we just had, where yes, we realize it plays into a lot of aspects of our life? Or is it kind of just not dealing with it?
I think we are. It's just like you said, we're doing it slowly but surely. Like, I mean, yeah. We can't always rely on like the celebrities or people on TV to do everything. Yeah. We are our own celebrities, as you can see with TikTok and Instagram. Yeah. Like this, your local neighbor is your Instagram influencer. Mm-hmm. So I think we are doing it slowly, and I definitely think 2020 has pushed that a little bit. I have seen
that movement,
so much more darker skin, not even just the darker. I can see them on planners, I can go buy them on my clothes. Mm-hmm. Like I see it happening. Mm-hmm. We just got to keep pushing. And I think we are.
And I think that's what it is. We just need to not get complacent once we think we've hit there, because there's always room for growth. There's always room for just doing more.
Because Hollywood is going to feed off of that. They're already feed off what we do.
We feed them, right?
We are their ratings. We are their. Yeah. We are the ones watching what they're making. So mm-hmm. I think we are. We as the, I guess.
Us and our listeners right now who have listen to our opinions, listen to the statistics, listen to what's going on in our community, and making a change. Even if it's mentally, even if it's having those conversations, I want to say thank you guys for listening.
The most important thing that you can do if colorism is something you've noticed or are actively involved in, whatever it is, it's kind of self-reflect and accountability. Like accountability is one of my favorite words in the English language, like self-accountability. And then mm-hmm. also hold those people that you do consider to be celebrities or influencers, hold them accountable as well. You know, and with that self-accountability, it's a difficult thing to to unpack, mm-hmm. how intricate and delicate it is and how woven into, you know, especially I feel for a lighter skinned person, because I feel like it's slightly harder for them to unpack, because it also, you know, is wrapped up with their own beauty standards. So, you know, I think that it's a lot of self-introspection and just keep holding each other accountable, holding yourself accountable. That's mm-hmm. the most important thing.
Yeah, I think yeah, that's sure. definitely it. So basically, reflect, speak out, hold yourself accountable, and just be keep you. Doing it. Be yeah. you, yeah. essentially is what we're saying.
Keep growing and learning. That's exactly. the best thing to do.
The reason we are here doing Melanin Speaking is because you guys showed out the support for it. And because yeah. even though our voices, we think, aren't being represented in this area, you guys are making an effort to do it.
So thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thanks, first guys.
All. So follow us on social media.
For sure.
Facebook, Instagram, Twitter.
At Melanin Speaking Podcast.
Definitely. Woo. Donate to our podcast. Help us grow. We have a PayPal set up. That's also in there.
Whoop, whoop.
And thank you for already like asking us about donations. I mean, we weren't even accepting them on our first podcast. And then we're like, can we give you money?
Right. And I'm like, oh, yes, you can.
Yeah, for sure. 110%.
But so now we're going to go to Jordan's grounding yourself after tough topics. Because when you go into discussing colorism with anybody, you are going to it's going to get heated. We're mm-hmm. going to tell you that now. It's not going to be an easy conversation. So how do you reground yourself after that? How do you...
Woosah, if you will.
Yeah, let's get into it. All right, thank you guys again for tuning in. I know it was a pretty heavy topic. And it's super important to stay grounded when you have busy work schedules, kids, school, all of those things, when they become too heavy, it's always important to practice grounding, because things around you can affect your energy whether you're aware of it or not. The first thing that I found that's super helpful is staying tuned into your environment and your feelings. And I know it sounds super counterproductive, right? But it's really taking a pause, at least 3 deep breaths, and listening to the noise around you, listening to that, feeling that stress that you are having at that moment and accepting it for what it is, which brings into my next tip, which is everything is temporary. It's temporary. You know, that stress that you're feeling right now is temporary. Those money worries that you have right now are temporary. It might not feel like it at this moment, but accept this moment for what it is, temporary. And then my third tip is using grounding crystals. And I've seen that some people are getting more interested in using crystals and the more esoteric things. So if you are interested, the crystals that I found that help with grounding the most is black obsidian, which is the first crystal that I ever bought. I love it so much because it absorbs it's supposed to, if you're skeptical, it's supposed to help absorb negative energy in your environment and take all that stress that you're feeling and allow you to get to the root of the issue. Like, why are you really feeling this way? What's really stressing you out? And it allows you to act again more in the moment. And the second one is black tourmaline, which I have all around the house, which just absorbs negative energy and allows you to stay grounded in your space, because your home is your safe space. So yeah, those are my 3 tips for grounding. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you guys so much for listening. Please follow us on all of our social media. We have Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Melanin Speaking Podcast. Bye guys. Thank you so much.